Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Buzz.
Welcome into a very, very special At the Buzzer podcast. We are, of course, a Ralphie Report podcast published in the Total Ralphie Radio news feed on all of your favorite apps. We got Spotify. We got all the other favorite apps that I'm not remembering right now. And we are once again joined by me, one co-host, best co-host, Jack, and a very special guest founder co-host, John. Hello, John.
How you doing, Jack? It's been a little while since I have joined you on At the Buzzer, but I am very excited to dive into our topic of conversation today and chat with our guest, our other guest.
Yes, that was the lead that we buried, our favorite best guest. Of course, we have Matt Brown, who does plenty of coverage across the country for Extra Points, his newsletter. Welcome in, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. And we were just talking about this before, but the national media has now seen some of what we've seen on a day-to-day basis in spring football, which is that Deion Sanders is wasting no time turning the roster into, if not better than something more in his image in Boulder. So the article that we saw you pop up on April 28th was about the massive roster purge and it's on the field implications, but something that I'm not an expert in and John's not an expert in that you are is the off the field implications into that whole situation. So I guess before we ask specific questions about the article, is there anything you wanted to say about that when you were writing that piece, diving into it? And any thoughts there?
I'm happy to. I mean, I think, you know, speaking to a Colorado fan audience, I think I'd want to reiterate that, you know, my skepticism and some level of frustration with this kind of aggressive roster turnover is not personal. Like, I'm not sitting here rooting for Colorado to fail. I didn't watch a ton of tape of last year's team, but I know how to work a spreadsheet. I saw enough of them to know that they were very bad. I understand the thought process behind this, and I can understand why a Colorado fan might feel like they're being picked on a little bit, or that maybe some of the criticism is overwrought. Mm-hmm. I am approaching this not just as somebody who cares who wins football games and how football games are played and how rosters are built, but I know my publication really focuses on off the field forces that shape this industry and looking at what this means for the future of athlete rights, what this might mean for future NCAA litigation, what this might mean for congressional hearings and the NCAA's efforts to get, you know, state laws changed. That's more of my focus. But if I'm sitting here in Littleton and all I care about is, can this team block better than last year? Like that's a different conversation. And I want to make sure that's, like, you know, telegraphed up front, mm-hmm. because I understand that different people, you know, care about different things with this whole operation here. And I respect that.
Matt, you have, for those of our listeners that haven't checked out Extra Points, it's a fantastic newsletter that covers the game in a way that's different than most other sources. And you've got, your audiences are this interesting Venn diagram of hardcore college football fans, a unique group of journalists, a lot of that coming back to our SB Nation days and how everyone has gone forth and conquered. And then college administrators, whether in the athletic department with the university, within those different audiences, how are you seeing this roster purge, this news, this change with how Coach Prime is handling building a new roster? How are you seeing that reaction different amongst those three audiences?
That's a great question. And it is a different response. I would say among the fans, among the more on the field oriented reporters and from people that work in football operations or in like in player personnel or on the coaching side. I've heard some of this feedback and I've read this elsewhere. The Athletic had a really good story about it this week too. And the feedback that the Athletic reported on one-to-one matches everything that I've heard, which is we are concerned about how this is going to work on the field because there aren't enough P5 caliber dudes in the portal right now. And that the assumption here is that not everybody that's leaving Colorado is somebody that was necessarily pushed out. There are Power 5 caliber players that have decided to leave for whatever reason. One of my readers, who is a writer for another national publication, said, you know, when I look at this roster, my concern is that it's a little bit of a 7-on-7 roster where you have the talent, you know, more concentrated in Deion's image. You have potentially, you know, plus level defensive backs, potentially plus level wide receivers. You may have an above average or maybe a better than that quarterback. And then your depth, and particularly at along the center of the field, is not where it needs to be. And that will show up by week 8, by week 9, or given Colorado's schedule this year, by week 4. Right. And you would look back and say, this might not work. Granted, Deion and his staff know things that we don't, and there are probably people that haven't hit the portal or where they're thinking about going isn't publicly known, but maybe Colorado knows something about that. But on the football side, there's a lot of, I don't know if there's 60 people that you can get that weren't cast off some other rosters and can be effective at building a culture, building cohesiveness within that roster. On the administrator side, I would say 80% of the feedback that I've gotten has been feedback that has shared my concerns in the piece, which is more of, we understand the football reasons why this is happening, but if we're going to get in front of Congress and testify that we shouldn't make athletes employees because if they're employees, they might get fired. Mm-hmm. And then somebody within our own conference fires 40 guys. That is going to completely undermine the message that we're trying to send. It's going to undermine how we're trying to reorganize this business, knowing that the court system and other factors are trying to push us in a more professionalized direction. So there's concern that this might be an accelerant, you know, for good or for ill. And fellas, tell me if I'm off base on reading this here. I feel like the Colorado recruiting story has broken contain in that it's not just the college football Reddit people and message board degenerates and recruitniks that have opinions about this. Yeah. This is the kind of thing where somebody's grandmother or mother or like normie could potentially say like, oh, y'all hear about this Deion Sanders guy. And when that happens, that means some lawmaker is going to hear about it. That means another attorney, somebody who's in a position to grandstand. And that's where you can run into some problems. And that was the feedback that I heard from multiple Division I conference commissioners. Not necessarily Power 5 commissioners, but Division I conference commissioners, like, you know, the feedback after that story was, we're concerned about how this is going to come up in a hearing in July.
To your point, just yesterday, I was shocked. I was just on my Twitter feed, and the New York Times, not the Athletic, the New York Times main feed was tweeted out the Bruce Feldman Athletic article about Deion Sanders. And that's, I guess, breaking contain past the college football world. National publications are talking about this in an interesting way. And I thought your piece did a great job showing how that might matter legislatively, which is something that I guess Colorado fans aren't thinking about and don't necessarily care about, because it's more about what the team looks like next year in their head as opposed to, you know, the ramifications legally.
I understand that. I have empathy for that. I my counter would be, you may want to care at least a little bit,
right?
Because if we move in a world in the next 2 years where college athletes become direct employees or directly compensated by athletic departments, and that's not a message board or a activist hypothetical, like Johnson v. NCAA is being decided in federal courts right now, and conservative judges are saying, hey, I don't think this amateurism thing makes sense anymore. If that system comes to pass, I would think that Colorado would be damaged by that change more than some of the peers that, that they compete against. That world is probably going to go worse for Colorado than it is for Texas or USC or UCLA. And right. So I would imagine that you may not want that to happen. Or if you don't want that to, if it is going to happen, you want to manage that change in some capacity so it is less detrimental to your program. So this could be a situation where this may help Colorado football the most in the short term. And then in 6 years from now, it might make things much worse. Who could say? I tell, if I had a perfect crystal ball, fellas, I charge a hell of a lot more than $8 for this newsletter, right? Like I'm trying to read the muddy tea leaves the best I can.
Well, and expand on that a little bit with when you said that Colorado fans in the future, this may not help the Buffaloes as much as it would help a Texas or an Ohio State. And I think a lot of our listeners would probably can understand what you're alluding to, but let's dig into that a little bit further. And also, what is the ceiling for Colorado to move up in the ecosystem as a school? Obviously right now, football, Colorado's darn near to the bottom, and fans are struggling with wanting to get back to the glory that the team had. But can Dion move them up in the college football echelons? And how could this hurt them more than some of those other schools? Can we dig into that?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, 10,000 foot level here, some of the changes that are possible, whether that is with the federal court system, whether that's the National Labor Relations Board, or whether that's Congress itself, in the next 2 to 3 years, we'll be deciding cases that would say, hey, you can't, amateurism doesn't exist anymore. Like college football players are employees. Mm-hmm. One of the big questions is not will college football players become employees? Absent congressional action, my professional opinion is it's very likely they will be. The bigger question is what happens to everybody else? And right. In a system where theoretically college baseball and women's basketball and college softball and soccer and alpine skiing and like this whole thing fall under the employee model, then that puts a significant revenue crunch on for athletic departments. And we know that, you know, Colorado in particular, that doesn't have an SEC or a Big Ten television deal, that has struggled with alumni donations and other revenue streams more than some of their Power Five peers. And you know, one of those big flagship deals is this points bet, you know, gaming initiative has already kind of gone up in smoke. Like that's not something that a lot of other schools would do because they could decide the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. I understand why Colorado did that. So now suddenly you have a system where potentially 35% of your revenue, 40 maybe or more, may have to get funneled directly to players. And you still need to pay for facilities. You still need to pay for some of these other things. So if you're a place that like Texas or an Ohio State or UCLA even, where your long-term finances are more secure compared to some of your peers, this will be a very disruptive change. Fans might not like it, but you're going to have the tools that you need to do, that you need to weather that change most likely. But if you're Colorado or Purdue or Kansas State or Iowa State or any number of other programs that don't have FU global money, those changes can be a little bit more uncertain. And to win in a place like Colorado, I think across lots of different sports, you are not going to be able to get the state, you know, you're not going to get Kentucky basketball 5 stars every single year in basketball. You're not going to get, even with Deion Sanders, you're not likely to assign 65% of your class to blue chippers. You have to do things a little bit differently, take advantage of elevation, play a different scheme, make people uncomfortable, all these other things. There's, I think, an open question in a completely different college sports ecosystem, will that be possible in a world where we have a collective bargaining agreement or some other structures? And I can't tell everybody how to think. And obviously what that new world looks like is not completely determined. But I don't think anybody that doesn't have unlimited resources should approach that with some level of concern. Like we know you can win an Alamo Bowl, you can make a Sweet 16, you can do a bunch of things under this current system, and potentially Colorado do even more. In the next system, there's a lot of unanswered questions. I don't think I would be in a hurry to get to that system if I rooted for a program like yours or Texas Tech or anybody else that's kind of a mid-cap P5 program. And I don't mean that pejoratively. That's just like, I can read the checking account. Like that's what it says.
Excellent explanation. Thank you.
And this might be a dumb question going off of that, but assuming that we do get into a point where athletes are professionals and are paid as employees, obviously one of the A's in the NCAA no longer applies and it is no longer amateur. I would imagine at that point, the NCAA becomes I mean, at this point, is the fanged and toothless. It would essentially, I would assume, die at least at that upper level. I guess in my head, I'm imagining that the TV revenue is kind of a split between schools that do not need the NCAA to govern and may be able to pay those employees, and schools that may that do need the NCAA to govern, or may be at a different step below, I guess, in terms of revenue, to your point, a mid-cap program. Is that something that is just completely off base? Is that, I guess I'm wondering, like, how do we try to split that out? Because like you said, it's impossible.
I don't think I don't think it's off base. This is not compelling podcast audio or compelling sports radio, but like my professional opinion is always, I think a lot of it depends. And so part of the reason why the NCAA still exists, even for Power Five institutions, part of it is they like the legal liability shield that comes with being a part of an organization of 350 plus institutions at the D1 level. So, and this is a source of major consternation if you root for Northern Colorado or Air Force or maybe anybody else in the state. But when the NCAA gets sued, the whole membership has to pay for those legal bills, not just the Power Five. So for all the NIL stuff, right, they're hitting up the Summit League and the WAC and the Big Sky, even though like it's not really their problem. And I know Lead One has discussed, hey, what would happen if we moved FBS football out of the NCAA entirely? What would happen if maybe we created this new ecosystem and we moved some of these schools? And then once the lawyers and the consultants say, you could do that, and yes, it would mean you wouldn't have to share money anymore with Sam Houston, but your legal fees and your insurance are going to go up by tens of millions of dollars, then people realize maybe we want to keep this going for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, in a post-professionalized world, could that change? Sure. Could that change along TV lines? It could. Could I imagine some Mountain West schools, despite not getting the television resources that you're getting, decide come hell or high water, we want to be in the biggest group and we'll make whatever changes we have to do? I mean, we've seen what Colorado State's been willing to do to spend money they don't have to elevate their athletic department. Like, could we see a world where they decide to do that? I mean, it's possible. I think a lot of it just depends on the scope of who's considered a professional, because I could see a world where maybe only men's and women's basketball, football, and one or two other sports are professionalized, and schools like Colorado still have ski teams, or still have cross country programs that are amateur, and maybe those are run by USA Track or USA Volleyball, and the NCAA just sublicenses those to run tournaments. There's a bunch of different ways they could go. I think the only thing that I would say I would be very comfortable saying is we are moving towards a system of explicit professionalization unless Congress steps in. And I'm not saying Congress should. I'm a critic of amateurism. I'm just saying like that is the reality right now.
So let's taking the amateurism piece off the table for a moment.
Yeah.
Let's imagine a world where this works, where the Buffs this year are maybe not even bowl eligible, but close. They're winning four or five games, and you can see a future where, okay, he turned the roster over. He won some games that they wouldn't have been competitive in or even close a season before without doing so. What impact does that have on the college football landscape and especially athletic directors and how they hire and who they hire? Yeah. Is this going to not drastically, but will it change how first-year head coaches look to turn over their roster? We saw Lincoln do it last year in USC, and then Coach Prime has obviously taken it to another level. And could there be another Deion? Are there schools out there that are ready to say, okay, we need to get someone that knows how to create this conversation, who knows how to use social, that brings in his own video team? Could that be something that other schools try and emulate?
I'll say this up front, for good and for ill, I don't think there's another Deion Sanders, man. the man is a brand and unto himself. Mm-hmm. He is one of a kind. And we saw this at the HBCU level a little bit with a couple of schools trying to say, well, hey, we can go bring in our own wealthy, well-connected NFL legend. And maybe Eddie they George. Can capture some of that magic, right? Eddie George, Grambling hired the Hugh Jackson.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ed Reed was pretty close to getting a job. Those didn't work because they're not Deion. Like I love Eddie George. I grew up in Columbus, you know, and he's a brilliant guy and randomly an accomplished like singer and good at a bunch of different things. The man's not Deion Sanders. So if your blueprint is we need to bring in another Deion, I mean, maybe Shaq might be the only one I can think of, or go hire Charles Barkley. Other than that, like, that's not really a thing. The idea of we could bring in somebody to turn over three quarters of our roster via the portal and by being a social media focused force of nature and rebuild our team that way, I absolutely think other schools will try that if this is successful. And part of the reason I think other people will do that, because if this works for Colorado, I think what that will provide data for is this idea that you don't actually need 85 players to build a really good team. Like, right. I guess it's possible. I don't think it is likely that there's going to be 85 Pac-12 caliber dudes on this roster. And we saw this with Kansas and even Arizona State more recently when they had major depth problems and they had injuries. Mm-hmm. They're rolling out an FCS roster. I don't mean that in terms of like how talented they were. I mean, like, you only had 62 guys. That's Northern Colorado. That's not Colorado. But if you can do this, if you get the right people and you get injury luck, you don't need 85. You can, you know, the NFL doesn't have 85. And that, I think, would change the calculus a little bit. It certainly does also speak to the idea that you don't really get a year zero anymore. I think if you bring in a new coach, unless you're at one of the worst jobs in college athletics, you are expected, I think, to show a proof of concept and turn things around quickly. And here, it isn't just what Lincoln Riley did at USC, which I would look at Jim Mora at UConn.
Yeah.
That wasn't a 65-person turnover, but I think they turned over 15 people. And they brought in a couple of starter, you know, UConn starter guys from other programs. And they went from, you know, abject horror show to a bowl team in 1 year. Is UConn good? No. Like, was UConn lucky a little bit? Sure. But that was a massive jump. We also saw examples of teams that tried to do this and it didn't work. It didn't work in Nebraska. It didn't work at Texas State. It didn't work at Miami. That did this, you know, on a much smaller scale for 2 years in a row. So, it's a bit of a mixed bag. But if Deion's able to come in here and say, I'm going to bring in 55 of my own people immediately, and we're going to win 5 games, and we're going to be an SP plus top 60 team or something, will Auburn try it the next year? Yeah. Will they be able to do it as well as Deion does? Maybe, maybe not, because what they don't have in his charisma and in his marketing ability and in his brand building, other schools are going to have more NIL money.
Right.
And they might just be able to bribe some kids that Colorado can't do. So that will be worth watching. I'll tell you what, I would not want to be the 61st best guy on a P5 roster if this worked.
Right.
Because that guy's ass is getting cut if this system is successful in any way.
I love that answer, and I guess I have a few different offshoots I'd love to go off of that. So one of them, I think, to me, the best success story of turning over a roster while still winning and putting yourself in a position to win better is Oregon. Because Oregon, I believe my math is right, has 9 players that were there in 2021. Out of, you know, whatever that is, but because they kept the right people, they had the NIL money, they had the coach with the vision in place, and I guess to me, most importantly, they got a great quarterback. They were able to win through that while still remaking it in their new coach's image. I don't think Dan Lanning is Deion Sanders. I also don't think Deion Sanders is Dan Lanning, right? So I think there's some institutional limitations that do not allow Colorado to do anything like that. But I do think that Oregon is a really good example of someone that has turned over a lot of the roster quickly and won through it, partially because they have the administrative buy-in and also the coach. And frankly, also, Mario Cristobal had a good team and he left, so they still had a good team there, right? There was less remaking he had to do as opposed to just, like, adding to it. I guess the other part of that is I love when you said Deion Sanders is one of one, because I do think no one else would even attempt this necessarily the way that Deion Sanders is doing it. I think one thing we know he's bad at is being quiet at a lot of things. I think he's naturally a marketer and proud of what he does. So I guess I'm curious too, just thinking about that, you know, when we've seen this now turnover and we're talking about, I don't think the portal has a lot of Power 5 players. To push back a little bit, I don't think Colorado fans necessarily think that that's true. But I do think what a lot of fans are looking at is the gap between the players that are leaving and Power 5 players is pretty massive. And even if there's a decent amount of transfer portal players that fit in that gap that aren't Power 5 replacement level players, that's still worthwhile in terms of an upgrade. So I guess curious to hear what your thoughts about that, or if you've heard anything around that nationally, because I think that's where a lot of Colorado fans are, is they might not be Power 5 level, but they're better than what we have.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I think that's possible. And I would probably want to, I think I would want to spend more time, you know, going to film and trying to do scouting to figure that out. Because the tricky thing with football is it's not like how good you are isn't just your 247 rating, right?
Right.
It's how you fit in with other people and how you can be developed. I have no doubt that there are players, the probably young players on last year's team with where the culture kind of gave up on each other and there wasn't great player development that are pretty bad right now, but could become good Pac-12 football players by the end of their career. I also understand that if you have a mandate to get better quickly and to rebuild some excitement and some interest around this program, and you can't afford to take 3 years to develop, then you might say, listen, you might have that great, you might have a great career ahead of you. It just won't be here because that's not the kind of program that we can be. As other players were probably just reaches from Carl Durrell's staff and would be happier in the Conference USA or the, the Missouri Valley or somewhere else. That's entirely possible. And there's some that are going to play in the Big Ten or are going to play in the Big 12 or the SEC. And for culture fits or because they didn't like the staff or for whatever reason aren't going to stick around. So I would say that argument is possible. The other thing I think you have to think about is we don't really have like a track record of somebody being able to sustainably build a roster constantly flipping like this, like they're playing Football Manager or something.
Right. And
so even if you are getting it, so let's say you take a transfer from Old Dominion and that guy has 2 or 3 years eligibility and he provides an incremental benefit. Well, I mean, you have to have that guy now for another 2 years if he has full eligibility left, because the new NCAA rules say that if a guy's transferred more than once, if he leaves, he remains as a counter on your roster. He remains as a counter against your APR score. So is that incremental gain better than what you could have gotten with a high schooler or what you could have gotten by developing somebody you already had? I don't know, right? And I don't know to what extent this staff was committed to finding some of that stuff out versus let's just go off and get who we can get. That wasn't necessarily how they needed to win at Jackson State. And again, like for me, that's not a pejorative. I think it just speaks to there's some things about this staff that we don't necessarily know yet, because you could out-talent people. And you didn't need to have enormous depth to win a bunch of games in the SWAC, even though I think the coaching talent there is very high. So it speaks to the risk, right? Like this is a very bold, very different thing. If it doesn't work, well, what you're doing before wasn't working either, and now it's at least interesting. If it does work, potentially significant changes for how other people build their rosters. It's going to mean everybody should watch some Colorado football games this year, which hasn't been the case in a minute.
Yes, and like you said, you know, it is not an easy on-ramp, right? And it will be apparent very quickly, the success of failure, because TCU and then Nebraska at home is about as public as you could have for a starting of the season. I guess the final question or point I had based off of that is I think part of the reason why Deion Sanders is such a good fit at Colorado specifically too is because Colorado has been mired in institutional apathy and overall athletic department lack of success, you know, one winning season of football in 17 years. So I think they were more than willing to cede a lot of control to Deion Sanders, who has needed a lot of that leeway to do what he needs to do. Even with the video team, like John brought up, like he brought all of his own support system pretty much too. I'm curious if you've heard anything from the administration side or the overall, I guess, coaching side too. If they're worried that this does try to catch on about having to cede some of that control to coaches, because I do think that's part of the reason why Coach Prime and CU work so well together, because CU is willing to give up so much of that to Deion Sanders. I don't know if that's true across the country.
Well, what you're describing there is a power struggle that happens at a lot of departments throughout the country. And it isn't necessarily just what do we give to the football coach versus the athletic department, but then it's also the boosters and other mm-hmm. extensions, right? Some people need more of that than others. I think based on what I saw from Sanders at Jackson State, and I think based on Sanders' career beforehand, he is somebody that I think would benefit from somebody in the building occasionally telling him no. It's not, again, there's only one Deion Sanders, so it's not like a great comparison, but I think that would have been true with Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, who is somebody who also has a really hard time just being cool for like 10 freaking seconds. and who the athletic infrastructure was really built to empower him in a lot of ways. Eventually it worked, but the department got into some trouble that maybe they could have avoided had they had a more independent support structure, right? Someone tell you no. The advantage to building everything around one guy is that you can get things done quicker. And especially if you need to do something this dramatic. And I think at a place like Colorado, where you haven't had sustained athletic success for most of our adult lives, I understand why that would be a very, a bet you'd be comfortable making, because what you've been doing before wasn't really working. You also run the risk, though, when you have somebody that is a big personality and is it might take some big swings, is that if there's no structure to check him, you can get into big trouble. There was nobody in Columbus who was telling Urban Meyer no, and that's right. How you end up with Zach Smith and also everything that happened to Florida. I don't think there was anybody telling Deion Sanders no at Prime Prep, and that's how you end up with like that disaster piece. There weren't enough people at Ole Miss telling Hugh Freeze no or calling him out. And, you know, that's a whole nother three hour show. So right. I don't want to say that like Deion Sanders is a bad person or that Ole Miss circus Hugh Freeze is exactly the case here. But that is the calculated risk that you run when you cede both like infrastructure support really to the football coach, especially a guy who's never coached FBS football before. And also like the public case here, right? Like if there's an issue between Colorado's athletic director and Deion Sanders in the next 2 years, who's the Colorado fan going to side with?
Right.
Like, it's not the suit, right? It's not the guy that's hitting up the donors. It's the new face of the department.
Right.
The other thing I think quickly for my peers, everything you just said, Jack, I think makes a ton of sense. This is a place that's going to give him a lot of power. It's a place to let him reshape things here. And that may work out very well. Mm-hmm. What was surprising to me and some of my other peers about this job is that Boulder, Colorado and University of Colorado are wonderful places. They have many, many great attributes. I would not say it is necessarily the most melanin blessed campus or fan based in the world. Mm-hmm. And Deion Sanders is very proudly black. And it's like, I want to bring in HBCU stuff to Boulder. And I'm going to talk and act and dress the way that I am, which can be great. And that kind of culture clash can work out very well in some places. It can work out very well when people are winning in some places. And in other places when things aren't going well, it can become a challenge. I would have expected maybe a more urban environment or a more diverse environment, yeah, or more diverse state for where he might go. When HBCU coaches or staffers are hired, they're generally to other places in the South. Mm-hmm. This could work out very well, but I'm saying this not to say I think Colorado's racist, which is not what I'm saying. Just that this is already a very brash, different guy. Yeah. This is another factor to think about in case this team goes 3-9.
Yeah, and last point on that too. I thought it was interesting that his opening press conference, he mentioned, I did not expect him to mention the track records he has had recently of hiring black head coaches. He's the third out of four of the last football coaches hired.
This is a great point. This is a great point. And it's something that the Pac-12 as a league, I think, actually does really well.
Yeah.
Compared to the Big Ten that likes to pretend that they've solved racism and that's just a Southern problem. And then there's no staffers anywhere at those institutions. That is definitely true.
And great answer. I appreciate that.
Let's do a little role playing, Matt. Especially based on what you know in the circles that your newsletter runs in and reaches. And put yourself in Rick George's shoes, Colorado athletic director. We don't know the conversations that he and Deion have had. We don't know what was agreed upon or what wasn't agreed upon or shared. But you're Rick George. You're sitting here on May 5th. You saw the spring game. You saw the sellout. You saw season tickets sold out. You've also seen the roster. You've seen the coverage, not all positive. How are you feeling? How are you feeling about this grand experiment a few months in? And is it more positive, more negative than you may have expected?
Legitimately, I think if I was him, I'd be feeling pretty good. Because you knew that, you know, if you're bringing this guy, no matter what happens, you're never going to get uniformly positive coverage. You know, if you're bringing in somebody that's tied to the Barstool Sports extended universe, that there's going to be some part of the NPR tote bag, you know, holding community that's not going to like this guy. And you know that recruiting has some rough edges, and that's going to be part of it. But you also know that you need to fill that stadium. And you need to get people, donors engaged, and you need to get brands engaged and get people talking about Colorado football. So if I was an AD, well, I would probably not be sleeping super well because I'm aware of what a calculated risk that I've made. If it doesn't work, I'm not going to have a job at Colorado anymore. But look, the ESPN's broadcasting your spring game. It's sold out. You're going to have national reporters checking in with you all season long. You're going to be on TV a lot. You know, if things don't go well with the Pac-12, which is a whole different reason why I'd be losing some sleep, you're going to have some other options. There's no risk-free perfect solution here, but from his vantage, I think you're probably feeling pretty good so far.
And you mentioned the eyeballs, and looking at the, it's May, but we can go ahead and start looking at week one, and specifically week one Saturday, and the lineup of games on that weekend. There's North Carolina, South Carolina. There's Penn State, West Virginia, not a whole lot. I think there's a Ohio State, Indiana, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly. But no, there's not a whole lot. It's a pretty light slate for opening Saturday, week one. And then you have Colorado and Prime and all of the curiosity around how this is going to work, taking on the loser in the playoff final last year at TCU against that team, a team that – according to reports, courted him a year previous. Mm-hmm. What kind of numbers are we talking on this game? Can you remember a game that's going to have this much hype and this much week one concentrated eyeballs on it? And what should we expect? Like you mentioned earlier, there are folks that don't follow college football closely. There are folks that are on the New York Times list that are seeing them share athletic stories. How big should we expect this game to be from a media coverage standpoint in week one against TCU?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, trying to handicap the exact number is always going to be hard because that depends so much on time slot and channel. Mm-hmm. But week one's always kind of weird because a lot of the big brands play on Thursday or Friday of that particular game, right? Like the Florida-Utah game is going to be a pretty big helmet game, but that's on Thursday, right? Nebraska-Minnesota are playing. That's on Thursday, and there are an unexpected number of kind of FCS games. You know, looking through here, I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being your ABC game, like your primetime game here for that particular opener. So I would certainly, more than any non-conference game in Colorado over the last 8 years that I could think of here. I mean, Alabama played USC in week one a little while ago. You know, Clemson and Auburn have played or Clemson, Georgia have played in week one before. Ohio State and Notre Dame played week one like last year. That was a national broadcast that had a lot of hype to it. But when was the last time could College Game Day be involved in this? Is this going to be like the lead one or lead two story in like the first 2 weeks of the season? That hasn't happened in a while. That will probably be what we're talking about.
Excellent. Well, we can't wait to see it. We know it'll be matched that the next week at some level when Matt Rhule and Nebraska head into Boulder. You really couldn't ask for, maybe not from a win perspective or getting your sea legs with a new roster, but as far as attention and coming right out of the gate with storylines, it couldn't have lined up any better for Colorado this next season.
Oh yeah. I'm so glad those two teams are playing even independent of Deion Sanders and everything else here. It is, I mean, correct. Maybe there is a legitimate rivalry growing with Utah or with some of these other places here, but I would imagine for folks of a certain age, there's some deep seated anger still at some of those Big 12 and Nebraska's still a Big 12 team in my heart. Like, it's fun to keep playing those. Like, I want Nebraska to keep playing Oklahoma too.
Yeah, and this is a nice friendly reminder that I'm going to plug once again. Nebraska has not beaten the Colorado Buffaloes since 2009, so just letting everyone know.
People forget that. That's true.
People forget that. They like to forget that often, but I will keep trying to remind them. So I think all I have, too, is getting more into the football-specific parts. You know, that first game, you mentioned it now, by the way, FanDuel has TCU as a 21.5-point favorite, which I think is interesting. Given that they have very public losses as well, I thought they'd try to get more public money on CU, and maybe they are, and I'm just crazy, but TCU is massive favorites for that first week. But just going through some stats last year on CU's team, Matt, I'd love to get just quick hits on how you think some of this might change for them, because I know there's some more skepticism on your side than our side. And then finally, just going through CU's season this year, how you think they're going to finish. So let's start. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I will begin this segment with a quick caveat that projecting winners and losers is less a major part of my focus. And yes. I think especially now it's hard to do this before June, because even I still don't know 100% who's going to be on everybody's roster.
Well,
and that becomes more clear
for CU.
Yeah. Sure, in a couple of weeks. So I'm happy to sound like a dumbass here and go.
No.
Oh.
Did we lose Matt?
We just lost you for a sec, Matt.
There we go. I think we might have just gotten Matt back. There we go.
Yep. Perfect. Yep.
And I'm not trying to go game by game, because like you said, so much is still in flux, but I like to now use the updated win total number as a quick over-under. So last year, CU's offense scored an average of 15 points a game. That was 127th in the country. CU's defense gave up an average of 44.5 points a game. That was last in the country, 131. In my mind, I see that getting closer to around, lower 20s on offense, like 23, 24 points a game, and then getting closer to like 35 points a game, which would put them in that 80 to 90 range on offense and defense. And also in my mind, that gets them close to that 3.5 win total that Vegas has them at. So I would put that around like a 4-win team or a 5-win team if CU gets very lucky on a certain game. So in your mind, is that like crazy for me to think if they're a mid-80s offense defense team and, you know, win 4 games? What does that look like to you nationally? Is that a success for Deion, or, you know, is that leaving people wanting more?
My unpopular answer would be I think anything above 4 is an unequivocal success.
Okay.
Anything below 3 is a failure. Whether it's a success at 3 and 4, I think depends on how competitive you are against the teams that are substantially better than you. Mm-hmm. But this team, you know, look at the schedule. If they beat Colorado State, a rebuilding, you know, they split the Arizona State Stanford, you know, series. They beat Arizona. Maybe they catch somebody else, and then they just get freaking drilled by Nebraska, Oregon, USC, and Utah. I don't know if that changes anybody's perception necessarily. If you eke out a couple of 6-point wins and then get stomped, if you're competitive, if you drop 30 points on some of those teams, and you provide compelling television for people to watch, then I think it would change. And my maybe ignorant view is I would feel cautiously more optimistic about this team's scoring ability and offense than I would about their defense, especially over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is going to depend on injury luck. Like I would look and say, if Sanders gets injured and Colorado has to play backup quarterbacks with some significant snaps, I would say a per play average in the 100s is on the table. And that's just a reflection of what the depth looks like on this team. If they are pretty clean on that front. And I think given the potential for this team to be pretty explosive, then I think you could see raw scoring potentially even above 80. That's the frustrating thing is there's some pretty big variance,
right?
That hinges on 7 guys and what kind, how quickly they acclimate to this level, how healthy they are, and how consistent they are. And that's not really true for that many other teams, I don't think.
It's definitely, yes, star power first for CU in 2023. Honestly, I'm wondering too if the swing is, where is Travis Hunter going to play? If he's at receiver, does the offense get that much better versus is he at cornerback? Does that help the defense? You know, I'm sure.
Or does he do both? Does he end up playing 70 snaps a game? I would imagine that they might end up using him on returns too. Or at least in some kind of gadget plays. Because if that's the thing, right? If you've only got six dudes who are like capital D dudes,
yeah,
you need to be creative with them. If Travis Hunter, if the one guy on this roster that had the potential of Travis Hunter was your running back, you're throwing him the ball seven times a game. Like you're spreading him out. You just gotta find a way to get him involved. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up doing a little bit of both.
And I think that's what they sold him on. We saw that slightly in the spring game as well, like you said, nationally televised on ESPN too. But I guess I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but with it scripted that he was wide open in the end zone for the first touchdown, who's to say? But
I can tell you the answer to that one. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Sources with direct personal information have said no, that was on purpose.
Love it.
That's incredible. Yep. He's a natural marketer. What can we say?
Yeah.
John, unless you have anything else, I think we're happy to wrap this up.
No, we really appreciate you joining us today, Matt. Again, for those that haven't check out extrapointsmb.com. Matt's newsletter is a fantastic resource for all college football fans, and we really appreciate you joining and talking a little shop with us.
It's my pleasure. I can promise anybody listening to this, like, look, the newsletter is not Deion Sanders slander 4 days a week. Like, I think I'm looking here the past couple of days. Like, I wrote about the wisdom of playing games in Mexico. There, I'm going to have some NIL reporting beforehand. I've written a lot about the development of the EA Sports College Football video game. I was the guy that broke when it was going to come out. Mm-hmm. I've shared a lot of information about gameplay and everything. So all that stuff interests you. You might enjoy extra points in your inbox.
Yeah, and as CU fans as well, I think some of your larger thoughts about, you know, what some leagues are doing, what that might mean for realignment purposes, all of that's great. Your national coverage is incredible, and I personally am very appreciative that you're looking at NCAA football 2024, because God, I need a new game, and that one's gonna hit. So yeah, I'm excited.
Man, I can't wait. My big ambitious goal is to find a way to get in the game. I have a couple of people at EA who started off with feeling animosity towards me because of all my Husky Floyd was. That's now grown to respect, and I can't promise, but like that is the goal, right? To have my name as one of the ones at the bottom of the screen in the newsfeed or something. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
Right. When you're creating a team or you're taking over Old Dominion and you hire a firebrand media type, there's going to be a Matt Brown and EA foying you. Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Or we can get really meta and like halfway through the season, like on the screen, like Matt Brown reports that EA 25 is coming out. Like if that was the only thing that I did, perfect. I would be it'd be great.
Thank you so much for joining, Matt. We of course learned a lot. ExtraPointsMB.com is the place where you can read it, and then of course the newsletter is worth every penny. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, guys.
Buzz. 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 Buzz.